Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara is discussing the statement of Rabbi Yochanan that we saw back on Daf Mem, that even though Rabbi Shimon believes that a Yotzei Dofen by a human being is considered to be a full-fledged Leida, that is not true by animals, that's not true by Kodoshim, and not true by a Bechor. The Gemara brought a proof from a Braita that discussed the positions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon with regards to things that are pasul from going on the Mizbeach. One of the items that was disqualified from going on the Mizbeach was a Yotzei Dofen. That shows you, consistent with what Rabbi Yochanan said, that Yotzei Dofen is a problem by Kodoshim. It's not considered to be a Leida. That's what we're up to. And the Gemara concluded, Ketani Miha, in the Braita, Yotzei Dofen, Delo. My love, how would you explain the meaning of that Yotzei Dofen? Isn't it a Yotzei Dofen de Kodoshim? So if it's a Yotzei Dofen of Kodoshim, that corroborates Rabbi Yochanan's contention that Rabbi Shimon believes that a Yotzei Dofen by Kodoshim, a cesarean section for an animal or an animal that is born not through the birth canal, is not qualified to be a Korban. Amar Rav Huna b'Reita Rav Natan. Lo, who says you have to say the Yotzei Dofen there is referencing to Kodoshim? Maybe it's a Yotzei Dofen de Bechor. Bechor that comes out in a cesarean section not through the birth canal would not be classified as a Bechor. Mar says, Bechor mi peter rechem nafka. The Bechor, we know from the fact that it has to be peter rechem. Over there, there's a direct demand that it come through the birth canal in order to be kadosh, b'kadushat ha-bechor. I don't need a pasuk here, zot torat ha-ula, the miut of zot, to teach me that a bechor is disqualified when it doesn't come through the birth canal. I have that from the world of bechor itself, where it says peter rechem. Without peter rechem, there's no kadushat ha-bechor. Elamai di kodoshim. So now you're going to tell me it's because of the Kodoshim that it's a Yotzei Dofen and that's a disqualifying factor because of the word Zot, that mi'imo imo nafka. We already noted this, that there is a Zera Shava of imo imo, which we mentioned at the beginning of the Perek. And by Kodoshim it says Vayashivachimim tachat imo. So we learned Zera Shava imo imo from Bechor to Kodoshim. So then, I have another pasuk as well. Why do I need the Zot, Torah Ta'olah, to teach me that a Yotzei Dofen is disqualified? I have that from the Gzer Shava of Imo Imo. It says, Hai Mai. The two cases are not comparable. Iyamart Bishlamo de Kodoshim. If you say that we're speaking about Kodoshim that is disqualified from a Yotzei Dofen, Hainu de Atzriche Trei Krai. Now I understand, or I can explain why you need two psukim. One pasuk of Imo Imo, the Gzer Shava, another pasuk of Zot Torah Ta'olah to exclude a Kodoshim that's Yotzei Dofen. Chad, the Behemat Kulin, the Oli Derech Dofen. Vak, the Shah, that's the first scenario, is a Behemat Kulin. Wasn't Kodesh at all. It was born through a cesarean section. It was born not through the birth canal. And now you want to be Makdish, such an animal. So that is a disqualifying event. That's what one pasuk teaches you. Vechad, the Behemat Kodoshim, the Oli Derech Dofen. And another pasuk to disqualify a behemat kodoshim that was born derech dofen, that was born through cesarean section and not through the birth canal, because savar vladot kodoshim bahaviatan in kedoshim. And he believes that kodoshim only become kadosh when they exit the mother, not while they're in utero. This phrase here, Rashi claims, is unnecessary. Rashi says, nir beinai delogar sinanlei. I don't think you have to put this in the Girsa. Uperish Mishubashu. And it was an explanation that was on the side of the Gemara that got added into the text of the Gemara. The Kol Shekein, the Man Damar Mishat Yitzira, Hein Kedoshim, especially, or certainly, according to the one who says that from the moment of conception, the fetus is considered to be Kodoshim, the Haino Bemei Imo, that was internal in the uterus, the Yitzrech Limute Mizot. And certainly you need a Pasuk, because that's more differentiated from a Behemat Kulin. So what the Gemara is pointing out is that there are two manifestations of a Derech Dofen that can end up being a Korban. One way is that it's born, not in the world of Kodoshim, it was born into the flock, and happens to come out Derech Dofen in the flock, it's a Behemat Kulin. Now you want to come and be Makdish, just an animal. Torah says, that's disqualified, you can't put that on the Mizbeach. That's what I need one pasuk for. I also need another pasuk to tell me, even though the animal is already kadosh, I still require that it come out the derech, the rechem, and the birth canal, and not come out derech dofen. And that is if you have a behemat kodoshim that became pregnant, And now it's giving birth to an animal that will also be a behemat kodoshim because it's born to a mother who's kodesh. That animal also will be disqualified from the mizbeach, and that's why you need a second pasuk. Now, according to the Gemara, it's according to the one who says that vlad kodoshim b'aviatan ein kodoshim. Then it's according to the one who says that the vlad only becomes kadosh once it's born, not when it's in utero, implying that if it was kadosh in utero, then it would be obvious that it would be disqualified in this case. And Rashi says that's just not true. If it's in utero, then you're more likely to need the pasuk than if it's just when it's born. Because if it only becomes kadosh when it's born, then the kedusha and the disqualification happen simultaneously. So over there, okay, I need a pasuk to tell me it doesn't work, but I would have a havamina maybe that it wouldn't be any different than a behemat chulin. In a case where the animal is already kadosh in utero and only becomes a problem at the moment of birth, that means the kedusha really preceded the birth completely. And that animal was kadosh way before it ever got disqualified by Derech Dofen. So over there, there's a real need for a pasuk to exclude it because it could be more likely that it would be qualified rather than disqualified. So Rashi says that the need for two pasukim is even more necessary according to the one who says that it was Bishat Yitziratan, they are kedoshin. And therefore, this qualifier of Kasavar, Vladot, Kodoshim, Avtan, and Kodoshim is unnecessary. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot over here say, Venira de Garisle, that we should keep it in the Girsa, Uler Buta Nakte, and it's coming to teach you a Chiddush. Ta'abagav de Rabiatan and Kodoshim, Velo Kadam Hekte Sham de Psulan. So this is what I had noted before, that you could have said, or you could have half a minute to say, that since it only happens to Kedushat the moment they are born, the same time that the disqualifying event takes place, that maybe over there you wouldn't need a pasuk at all. Because you would think that since the Kedusha only happens at the time of the psul, it's no different than a behemat kulin. Kamash Balan, since it took place bat achat, since it took place simultaneously, then the Kedusha is chal, and therefore you need a separate pasuk to disqualify it. And then in the end, Tosafot says that the Gemara could not have used the other girsa or the other possibility, which is that b'mei iman kidoshim, because Rabbi Shimon himself happens to believe that b'aviatan ein kidoshim. And so in order to be consistent with the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, you could have had this alternate girsa or this other girsa. Rashi just wants to eliminate it completely, but Tosafot says you can't put the other girsa in. And this girsa I can support because there is also a reason here maybe to believe you wouldn't need a pasuk. And the chiddush is that you do need a pasuk. In addition to the fact that the remaining items that we're going to mention now from the Braita require the din be that it's kodoshim b'aviatan ein kodoshim. And therefore it makes sense that the entire Braita is speaking in that context. Maybe for this particular issue it's not important, but for the upcoming issues it will be important that the b'aviatan ein kodoshim, that the animal only becomes kadosh after it's born, or when it comes into the world, not at the time that it was conceived. Ela'iyamart de bechor, if you want to say that the explanation of Yotzei Dofen in the Braita means a bechor, mipetarechem nafka, then we learn that out of petarechem, and there's no two manifestations of a bechor. By kodoshim, you can speak about something that's chulin, and then you're making a kadosh, or something that's born kadosh. By a bechor, there's only one way to be. That's when you're born as a bechor. You can't have a bechor that's chulin, that you're makdish to be a bechor. The kedushat bechor happens in the birth process. Therefore, there's only one type of kedushat bechor, and I would only need one pasuk to exclude it. So saying that I have a pasuk of zot terat olah and petarechem is unnecessary by bechor. By kodoshim, yotzei dofen, since there are two manifestations, one from a behemat chulin, that you're makdish, the other one that is kadosh, and then has a derech dofet. So since I have two manifestations, I have two psukim. The Gemara says, achinami mistabra, that makes sense, because the remainder of the items in the disqualified list from the Braita that Rabbi Shimon says we learned from Zot Torah Ta'ula, the word Zot excludes, igtani aroveya vanirba, vamukse vanevad vakilayim. All of these are disqualified in the Braita of Rabbi Shimon, and he's saying that they're disqualified from the Mizbeach, Imalu Yerdu, from the word Bezot. Hani Mehacha Nafka? You learn it out of the word Zot that they're disqualified? Mehatam Nafka? You learn this out from the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, where it's defining which animals are kasher to be an Olah. Over there it says, Mina Behema. And the Gemara learns from min, means from amongst the animals. That means not all animals are kshivim, only some. Dotsi, that comes to exclude aroveya vanirba, an animal that had bestiality performed with it. Mina bakar, from amongst the cattle, dotsi et ha-nevad. That comes to exclude an animal that was worshipped. Minatzon, from the flock animals, dotsi et ha-mukse. To tell you that something that's designated for tekrovet avodah zarah is also disqualified from this mizbeach. Uminatzon, and again, minatzon, dotsi et ha-nogeach. To exclude an animal that killed an individual. If the animal has two edim, then it's of course disqualified from the mizbeach because it's chayav mita, it's a surbana'ah. It's a case where the animal either killed based on evidence or the testimony of an ed echad, or the balim, the owners, are the ones who say it, and they admit to the fact that the animal killed someone, but since the mita or skila of the animal is a knas, modi b'knas is potur, the animal will not be put to death in that case. But it will be disqualified from the mizbeach. So it won't be a surbana. So a hedjot can use it, but it will be disqualified from the mizbeach. Vitu kilayim. And what about a mixed breed? Mehocha nafka, we learn it out from the word zolt. Mehocha nafka, we learn it out from that which is found in Pashat Emor. Shor o kesef o eis. Shor prat the kilayim. Shor comes to teach you that a mixed breed is disqualified from the mizbeach. O eis prat the nidmeh. That comes to exclude an animal that is born to common parents, that say they have goats as parents, but the animal looks like a sheep. So that's a nidmeh. They're all disqualified from the mizbeach. Ella, it's truchu trei krai. Why do I need two psukim by each one of these disqualifying factors for a korban? Chade be'mat chulin, v'chade be'mat kodoshim. One for an animal that is chulin, that you want to be maktish, if the animal was born kilayim, and now you want to be maktishit. The animal was born in nidmeh, and now you want to be makdishit. Also, v'chad v'imad kodeshim. And the second pasuk to exclude an animal that is already kodesh, that is giving birth to one of these animals, or one of these types. And that would be disqualified. Hakanami istrich trei krai. That's why here you need two psukim. So the conclusion will be, first of all, the Braita is supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's contention that yotzei dofen by kodeshim, Rabbi Shimon agrees that it is disqualified and that he does not consider it to be a leida. It's uniquely by human birth that he considers Yotzei Dofen to be a leida from the ribui of the pasuk. There's an extra word of teleid that tells us that even Yotzei Dofen is considered to be a leida. As far as the kodeshim are concerned, by all the kodeshim, we have two psukim. One pasuk of Zot, which says, imalu, if they go on mizbeach, yirdu, they go off the mizbeach. And I have a second pasuk that tells me that they are disqualified. The reason I need two psukim is because there are two manifestations of each of these disqualifying factors. One manifestation is if the animal was chulin and has this disqualifying event or character, and then you want to be maktishin. So I need one pasuk to exclude that. I need a second pasuk, which will be the zot, to exclude a case where it's born, where it's already kadosh. And now it has, under the auspices of it being kadosh, it becomes kilayim. And in that case, I need another pasuk to tell me if it ends up in the mizbeach, it comes off the mizbeach. To tell me that a behemat chulin has to come off the mizbeach, that's obvious. Chulin doesn't go on the mizbeach. Imalu yerdu. It has to be something that's kadosh despite the disqualifying factor, and that is imalu yerdu. Now we'll explain by each one of them how that happens. By the case of derech dofen, you can have an animal that's born derech dofen, and then you're makdish that animal. The Torah says it doesn't work. That's why you have the pasuk of imo imo, to teach you that that's not a good kedusha, and the animal remains kulin. The animal remains kulin, then I don't need you to tell me imalu yerdu. If they go on the mizbeach, they come off, because they don't belong on the mizbeach. So what is imalu yerdu? That's from the word zot. That's a case where the animal is already kadosh, and it gives birth to a baby through a derech dofen, so the offspring that is born is kadosh, because the mother was kadosh. And despite that fact, the derech dofen is a disqualifying factor. And that animal, even though it is kadosh, it's kadosh with this problem, with being a derech dofen, and therefore it's disqualified from the mizbeach. And that's what the word zot tells you. If it goes on the mizbeach, it's coming off the mizbeach. And similarly, with all of these items that we mentioned here, roveya v'nirba, that's easy to explain. It's a case where the bestiality was performed before you were makdish the animal. In that case, it never becomes kadosh, because of the exclusion of Minah Behema. And then if it happened after it was already Kadosh, there was bestiality performed with the animal, that's a disqualifying factor of the animal. The animal's still Kadosh. You can't change that. But if disqualified from the Mizbeach, Vimalu, Yerdu, now we learn how the word Zot. Muksa and Nevad, those both could happen with the Behemat Kulin, where it was worshipped when it was a Behemat Kulin, or it was dedicated to the Takrovit Avodah Zarah while it was Kulin. In that instance, if you're Makdishit, the Kedusha is not Chal, because of the exclusion from Min HaBakar and Min HaTzon. That tells you that never attains Kedusha. And if it happens after they are Kedoshim, which is a little more complicated, because if they're Kadosh already, it doesn't belong to you. Doesn't belong to you, you can't be Oser, something that doesn't belong to you. So then how is it that you make it into Nevad or into a Mukset? Rashi over here explains, by Kodshim Kalim, Alim de Rabbi Yossi Aglili. It's a case of Kodshim Kalim, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who says they are Mamon Balim. And since they are Mamon Balim, you can be Oser them. And that's how you get a case of something that's already Kadosh, that becomes Nevad or Mukset. And again, there, even though they are, despite their Kedusha, it's a disqualifying factor. And Imalu Yerdu from the word Bezot. Then you have the cases of Etnan, Umechir Kelev, which are mentioned in the Mishnah, but not mentioned over here, but they are also disqualified. The answer of that is also Ubar B'mei Ima. It's a case where you paid the harlot's wages with the fetus in utero. And this is what we noted before. Rabbi Shimon must believe that the fetus only becomes Kadosh when it exits the mother. So over here, the animal is internal to the mother. So while it's internal to the mother, who is Kadosh, it is not yet Kadosh. As soon as it's born, it will be Kadosh. While it's in utero, you offer that as a wage to a harlot for her services, or you exchange that for a kelev. That's a disqualifying factor for the animal. When the animal's born, it's born and it will become Kadosh, because as soon as it exits the mother, it's Kadosh. But it'll be Kadosh with this problem, with the problem of Mechir Kelev, or the problem of Vednan, it will be disqualified by the Pasuk Zot, even though, again, we know already, if it happened before, when it was Chulin, it's disqualified, because the Pasukim say you're not allowed to bring them as Korbanot. Nevertheless, even when it's Kadosh, and that happens, it still will be disqualified from the Mizbeach, and Alu, Yerdu, it will come off. Kedeses of Kilayim, Treifa, Yotze Dofen, all of those cases will be a case of Ladot Kodoshim, whereby it can happen when they are Chulin and disqualify it from ever becoming Kadosh. And of course, that can't go in the Mizbeach, and it goes on, it comes off. Or in a case where it's an offspring of Hekdesh, thereby the Kedusha and the Psul happen simultaneously, or the Psul exists and the Kedusha is Chal, irrespective, passively, and therefore the Kedusha is Chal with the disqualifying factor. That's where we have Zot to teach you, Imalu Yerdu. If it goes on the Mizbeach, then it'll come off the Mizbeach, and that's why I need two psukim for every one of these psulim. Tosafot over here suggests that maybe we need three psukim, because Treifa is mentioned over here, and over there in the beginning of Menachot, it says you need two psukim for Treifa, because you need one for a Treifa before the Hekdesh happened, and one for a Treifa to happen after the Hakdasha. And still, on top of that, we still need a pasuk of Zot over here, to teach me that Imalu Yerdu. So now it sounds like I need three psukim for each one of these items. One to tell me if it happened before the Hekdesh, it's disqualified. One to tell me if it happened after the Hekdesh, it's disqualified. And one to tell me that when it goes on the Mizbeach, it still comes off. So Tosafot says, once the Torah already told us by Treifa that the existence of both disqualifying events, when it's Chulin and then you're Makdishit, or if it's Hekdesh and then the event happens, they're disqualified. And on top of that, Imalu Yerdu, from there we see already there's a Giloi Milta, that any disqualifying factor, which is disqualified when it's Kulin and you're trying to be Makdishit. And so the Treifa tells us that it makes sense to say that that disqualifying factor also disqualifies after the animal is already Kadosh. Once we have that information, then we only need two psukim by any other psul. Now Gemara continues. Tan Rabbanan, Hamikasha Shlosha Yamim. A woman who's having birth pangs flowing of dam for 3 days before she gives birth, which is otherwise known as dam ha kishuei dam akoshi, blood that is being emitted through birth pangs, contractions, as an introduction to the birth that's going to come after it. We already learned that that dam is not dam ziva. It can be dam nida, but it will not be dam ziva, because it's dam that's associated with the leida, assuming she doesn't have any cessation of the birth pangs going into the birth for 24 hours, according to Rabbi Yeshua, for longer. In the end, there was a baby born, but that baby was not born through the birth canal, it was born through a cesarean section. According to the Chachamim, that's a yoledet bezov. The leida does not protect the dam that you cited before. Because according to the Chachamim, a C-section is not considered to be a leida. So you never had a leida. Since you never had a leida, it can't protect the dam that you saw before. And therefore, the 3 days of dam that you saw before will make you into a zava gedola, as if you had a sighting of 3 days during your May ziva. Rabbi Shimon Omer, ain't zo yoledet bezov. Rabbi Shimon the Shitato says that's not considered to be a yoledet bezov, because he thinks that derech dofen is a regular leida. And just like when you give birth through the birth canal, it covers the dam and says it's not dam ziva, so do over here. When the baby is born in a C-section, it also protects the dam so that it's not dam ziva. Now we have a second part of the braita, which is a little bit cryptic. The dam yotzei misham, the dam that exits from there, is tamei. Rabbi Shimon mitaher, and Rabbi Shimon says it is tahor. And the Gemara now explains, bishlama reisha, I understand the first half of the braita, Rabbi Shimon the tamei, the Rabbanan the tamayu. Rabbi Shimon is the shitato, and the Rabbanan are the shitatan, which is Rabbi Shimon who believes that yotzei dofen is a leida, it protects the dam from being dam ziva. Chachamim who think it's not a leida doesn't protect the dam from being dam ziva. Ela b'seifam b'may plige. In the latter half of the braita, what's the machloket? Amar Ravina. Ravina suggests kagon shiatzav la derech dofen. It's a case where the baby exited through a C-section, v'dam derech rechem, and the blood exited through the birth canal. V'az the Rabbi Shimon l'tamei, v'rabbanan l'tamayu. And Rabbi Shimon is the shitato that derech dofen is a birth, and therefore it protects the dam from becoming tamei. And the rabbanan are the shitatam, that that's not considered to be a birth, and therefore it doesn't protect the dam that came out of the birth canal. Where it says, matkifla Rabbi Yosef, chada, first thing, dain ureisha. You just made the Seifa case identical to the Reisha case. The Reisha case is where she's seeing dam going for 3 days through the birth canal, and then all of a sudden she has a C-section. That's the case in the beginning. You just repeated the case now in the Seifa and said, oh, Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim have their same opinion in the Seifa as they have in the Reisha. It's an identical case. Of course they had the same opinion. So what did you add? Ba'od, Misham. When it says that the dam comes from there, it's using a pronoun, but obviously the pronoun should match what is being said in that part of the braita, and that is makom vlad mashma. Sounds like the dam is coming out from the same place that the baby is exiting from. It says v'dam hayotzei misham. Misham is a reference to where the birth took place, and the birth took place derech dofen. Even though it's a dangling modifier, it's not clear where misham is referencing to. But the only explicit reference we have in the braita is to derech dofen. So it would make most sense to say misham means derech dofen. That means that the dam and the baby are exiting derech dofen. For that reason, Rabbi Yosef says Ravina's explanation is not tenable. Elam Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef explains the latter half of the braita in the following manner. Kagon sheyatzav vlad v'dam derech dofen. Both the vlad and the dam came out through the cesarean section, not through the birth canal. So then, what's the machloket between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim? Ubimekor mikomo tamei kamiflegei. They're arguing about whether dam that comes out of the uterus is tamei, irrespective of the woman being a nida or not. The question is, what's the status of dam that exits from the rechem? Is the rechem, as Rashi suggests over here, a place of tuma, and therefore anything that comes into contact with the mikor, with the uterus, automatically adds a din of tuma? And so to this dam that exited from the makor is affected by the makor, is affected by the uterus, and therefore is tamei, or is the uterus inherently tahor? And it's only dam that comes out of the uterus, that goes through the vaginal canal and exits the woman, that is considered to be dam nida. And it's a gzeirat ha-katuv, that dam nida affects the woman, but not that there's anything inherently tamei about the makor. So that is the machloket here. Mar savar mikor mikomo tamei. The Chachamim believe that the mikor, the uterus, is tamei, and therefore the dam that's being discharged here is also tamei. Mar savar mikor mikomo tahor. And Rabbi Shimon believes that the makor is inherently tahor, and therefore the dam that's being discharged over here that came from the uterus is tahor. Now again, Rashi explains over here that the makor is a place by which, if it is tamei, anything that comes into contact with it will be tamei. Tosafot, in discussing this issue of the makor being tamei, challenges Rashi's understanding over here that makor makomo tamei is based on tumat negia, coming into contact with the makor, because back on Tet Zayin Amud Aleph, where we discussed this issue, over here the Balei Tosafot ask a number of questions on how could it be that the dam of the makor is tamei because of contact with the makor. Afagav tumat beit hasdarim hi. First problem is that it's negia in a hidden place. And we know that with regards to the world of Tumah, any contact that happens not in an exposed area or an exposed place is not considered to be contact. Therefore, contact internally in the woman should not be classified as contact. So that's one problem with it. Number two is that by dam, in general, you need a revi'it of dam in order to be tamei. Yet over here, when it comes to the makor, we call it tamei even for the smallest amount, or less than a revi'it. And number three is, why is the woman tohora? She's in contact with her makor. The makor touches her, and therefore why is she tohora? Then I think you could answer because she touches the external side, not the internal side. But nevertheless, because of all these questions, both the Tosafot and Tosafot Rosh, back on Tetzayin and Aleph, say that the problem of Mekor is, it is Alocha the Moshe Mishinai. It is Gzeira Takatuv, it's Alocha the Moshe Mishinai, She Mekor Tamei, Vaisha Torah. That the Mekor is Tamei, and the woman remains Tohora, and that the Mekor is able to convey such Tuma is based on that Gezera Takatuv. Other Rishonim, like the Ramban, even suggest that the Mekor Mekomo Tamei is not a problem of Negia, something that came into contact with the Mekor that makes it Tamei, but rather, Galocha Lamosh Mishinai Gezera Takatuv is that anything that exits from the Mekor has a din of Avatuma, and therefore the Dam that leaves the Mekor will have a din of Avatuma, and therefore if it comes into contact with the woman, it will make her Tmeya. Because if you don't say that, then if the makor is an avatuma, and the liquid that she discharges, the dam that she discharges, is a rishon the tuma, it would never make the woman tmeya when she comes into contact with it, because it's too low a level of tuma. So those rishonim, instead of expressing it as being tumat maga, express it as being zerat hakatuv, and anything that exits from the makor has a status of avatuma. And that's the machloket here between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim as to whether Mekor is Mekomo Tahor or Mekomo Tamei. I'm a Reish Lakish. So Reish Lakish now says about this machloket between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. The Divrei HaMitamei, Bedam, according to Rabbi Shimon, who is Mitamei, Bedam, Mitamei Ba'isha. According to Rabbi Shimon, who says that the Dam is Tamei, he also says the woman is Tmeya. The Divrei HaMitaher Ba'dam, according to the Chachamim, who say the Dam is Tahor, Mitaher Ba'isha. They also say that the woman is Tehora. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, after Divrei HaMitamei, Badam, even according to Rabbi Shimon, who says that the Dam is Tamei, that's true, Badam. But Mitaher B'Isha, he thinks that the woman is considered to be Tohra. Va'azde Rabbi Yochanan Tamei. And this is Rabbi Yochanan the Shita To. Dama Rabbi Yochanan Mishun Rabbi Shimba Yochai. Minayin She'ena Isha Tmeya, Achi Etzei Matve Derech Ervata. How do you know that a woman is not Tmeya Tumat Nida? Until the dam exits derech ervata, until it exits through the vaginal canal, shenemar, because the pasuk says in Parshat Kedoshim, veish asher yishkavet isha dava, a person who sleeps with a woman who is in nida, vigilat ervata, and he exposes her erva et mikora heera, lamei she'en isha tmeya ad sheyetzei medve derech ervata. The pasuk mentions dava, and also says that Gilat Ervata, exposed to Ervata. So Erva and Madve are brought together to teach you that the flow of Dam must come through the point of Erva, must come through the vaginal canal, in order to make her into a Nida. Tosafot over here points out that Azar Rabbi Yochanan Tamei does not really help out over here. Because Rabbi Yochanan over here is citing this in the name of Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon is the one who believes that the Dam that comes out from the Makor is Tahor. So for Rabbi Shimon to say that the woman is Tahorah and she's only tveya if it exits through the birth canal, is no chiddush over here, and does not prove Rabbi Yochanan's position. Rabbi Yochanan's position is, even according to the Chachamim, who say that the dam is tameh when it exits the makor, that still doesn't make her into a nida. And so, what proof do you have from the statement that he brings in the name Rabbi Shimon? Even Reish Lakish agrees that according to Rabbi Shimon, the woman is tohora. He said, the man damar dam tohor, the woman is also tohora. The woman is also considered to be not a nida. So then, Reish Lakish would not disagree with this statement of Rabbi Yochanan, and why is that a proof to Rabbi Yochanan's position? So the Balei Tosafot say, Yesh lomar dahachi pehusho. You have to say here that the explanation of Reish Lakish is, according to the one who's mitamei b'dam, he says the isha is also tmeya because of re'iya, because of the sighting of dam. She's tmeya nida. And it's a case where the blood and the dam came out, derech dofen ubekoshi. And that's not considered to be koshi that is protected by the blood. And Rabbi Shimon is mitayer the dam, and he's also mitayer the isha, because it's considered to be a blood, and koshi that is samuch leida is Torah. But had it not been for the blood, even Rabbi Shimon would have agreed that the dam is tmeah. So it's clear that he does not require that the dam exit derech hayerva. What Reish Lakish's din is showing is that in the case or the scenario where the dam and the baby exit through the derech dofen, it's only because of the vlad that we consider it that it's protected, that we consider it to be tahor. And so if you took away the vlad, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that according to Reish Lakish, the dam is tamei and the isha is tameiah. And that shows you that Reish Lakish believes you don't need a riyah derech erva in order to be tamei. And that's why the statement of Rabbi Yochanan, even though it's brought in the name Rabbi Shimon, and just says the position of Rabbi Shimon, repeats the position of Rabbi Shimon, it's problematic for Reish Lakish. Because Reish Lakish's position is premised, according to the Balei Tosafot, on the Vlad. And the reason Rabbi Shimon says it's Tohor here is because of the Vlad. Absent the Vlad, he would say this is considered to be a Riyah, and the woman would be a Nidah. And that goes against what Rabbi Yochanan says in the name Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that an isha can only be a nida when it goes out derech ervata. And Rabbi Shimon Lakish seems to disagree with that and say, even derech dofen, it would be considered to be a problem. That's why it's as the Rabbi Yochanan the Tameh. So according to the Balei HaTosafot, Reish Lakish disagrees with Rabbi Yosef's explanation of the Braita, and he believes that in the second half of the Braita, everyone agrees that even a sighting that's not derech ha-erva is Tameh Tumat Nida. The only question is the dam that is exiting derech hadofen classified as dam ziva because it's not protected by the leida, or is it dam koshi because it's protected by the leida? On the other hand, according to the other Rishonim, Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim argue about exactly this point. And therefore, that means according to Rabbi Yochanan, there's only one machloka between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and the Chachamim, which is whether the dam akoshi is considered to be associated with the Leida and is Tohor, or is it not associated with the Leida and it is Tmeah? But they both agree that if it went out through the Derech Dofen, that for sure the woman herself is not Tmeah. Whereas Reish Lakish believes that there actually are two Machlokot here. One Machloket is whether the Leida Derech Dofen helps out to protect the Dam and make it into Dam Akoshi rather than Dam Ziva. And then there's a second machloket, which is that dam that exits derech hadofen, can it also be mitama the woman to make her tmeah? Rabbi Shimon believes that the dam is tahor, and the Chachamim believe that first of all the dam is tmeah because the leida doesn't protect you, and then even though it's not going out through the vaginal canal, it makes you tmeah. So their machloket is on two levels. One is whether the dam itself is tmeah, and then if the dam is tmeah, does it make the woman tmeah as if she had a discharge or a sighting? And therefore, that will help understand why, according to Reish Lakish, that will make the case in the Seifa distinct from the Reish, according to Reish Lakish, because the Seifa case where the dam exits derech dofen is teaching you a different machloket about whether dam that's yotze derech dofen can be mitamea the isha, to which Rabbi Shimon says no, and the Chachamim say yes, and that's independent of their machloket in the Reish, whereby when she has a discharge of dam through the vaginal canal, where she has a leida derech dofen, is that dam akoshi or is that dam aziva? And so there are two machlokot, and that's why you have two bavot in the Braita according to Rabbi Shimon Lakish. So now the Gemara continues with a totally new topic, and that is Amar Reish Lakish Shum Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. Reish Lakish, who was a Talmid of Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya is the grandson of Rabbi. It's one of the early Amoraim. Reish Lakish learned by him. Mikor Shinekar. If a piece of the uterus dislodged and then was discharged by the woman, v'nafal ha'aretz, t'meya. She is t'meya from that discharge, shenemar, because the pasuk says, yan hishafech nechushtech v'tiglei ervatech. So the pasuk says, because you discharged, spilled out your nechushtech, the real meaning of the word there in the pasuk is shame, that you have like let your shame out. But here, it's, as Rashi says over here, Nechushatech, is a reference to the Shulayim, the base, or that which is the bottom of. And he says that's a reference to the Rechem, that's a reference to the uterus, which is the base or the bottom of the woman. V'tigli Ervatech. And then your Erva was exposed. So here, when you spilled out your shame, your Erva was exposed. That's a euphemism for saying that you embarrassed yourself by letting be known that this is the way you behave or this is the way that you act. The Gemara is taking it much more literally and saying that your shilayim, your base, your bottom fell out and that exposed your ervatech, that made you into a erva, made you into a nida. So lamai, what type of tuma are we speaking about here? When the uterus is discharged or a piece of the uterus is discharged, that she's considered to be an erva or a tmeya, what din is that for? If you're going to say that she's now a nida, dama my rachmana velo chaticha. Torah says, dam is what makes you into nida. It doesn't say some discharge of flesh is going to make you into a nida. Ela the tumat erev, to make her tmeya, tumat erev, because she came into contact with this. That is the chiddush of that pasuk, or that limud that Reish Lakish is bringing from the pasuk in Yecheskel, which is that upon the discharge, when it leaves her, it makes her tmeya tumat erev, because the mekor itself is tamei, and it's nava tuma. When it exits the woman, upon exit, it touches the woman, and makes her into a rishon l'tuma, and that's why she has to go to the mikveh, and she's tmeya for a day. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, mekor sheziya kishtei tipei margiliot tmeya. If from the uterus exited out two drops of clear liquid, then she is tmeya. Lamai, what is she tmeya for? Ilei mala tumat shiva. If you want to say she's a nida and tamei tumat shiva, chamisha damim tmeim biisha. Too low. Only five types of dam are tmeim biisha, and there are no other colors. And they are the colors that are all similar to red that we've noted before in the Mishnah earlier. These clear or white drops are certainly not a color that's qualified to be a nida. Ela tumat erev. She also will be tamei tumat erev, because of the fact that they were discharged from the uterus. B'davka tarte, and only if there are two of them. Avachada ema mi'alma atyo. If there's only one drop that comes out, then we'll assume it came from the lining of the wall. It came from something besides the rechem itself. We need a little more than one to make it, give us evidence of the fact that this seems to be a discharge that's coming internally from the uterus, and that is two drops. And the two drops of whether it's white or clear droplets, because he says margaliot, like pearls. So these two pearl drops that come out, they are tamei, like an avatuma, and they make the woman into a rishon tuma, and therefore she has tumat erev from coming into contact with them, not because of the discharge or the sighting, but because of the contact. It's not clear here whether Rabbi Yochanan's statement is made about just this color dam, which is the view of the Tosafot Arid, or is this just a generic statement? Any two drops, no matter what the color is, would also have this effect on the woman, because we're not talking about dam nida anymore. We're talking about dam issued from the mikor that's not dam nida, and it's mitama because it came from the mikor. And that's the only reason it's tamea, and therefore maybe it has application to any color, not just the white or clear drops that Rabbi Yochanan is noting. Kol anashim mitamim bebeit achitzon. All women are mitama in the beit achitzon, means once the blood has exited the uterus, she is tmeya tumat nida, even though it hasn't exited her body yet. Hei niu beit achitzon. What is considered to be the outer chamber in which the woman is then designated as a nida, even though it has not exited her body. It's anything where a young girl, when she sits down, that area is exposed. That's the area of the erva. That area is exposed when a young girl sits down. That's the area that is considered to be the bayit achitzon. Amrei Rabbi Yochanan, oto makom galoihu. That's not considered to be bayit achitzon. That's not an area that is yet to have exited the woman, because it's a sheretz that is considered to be exposed. As we already noted, tuma only has application to something that is not tumat beit hastarim. It's not a contact that's done in an area that's not visible. This area is visible to the naked eye, and therefore if a sheretz were to touch that area, the person would be tamei, because it's considered to be exposed or external. So that can't be the bayit achitzon, because that's already as if the blood left the woman completely, and therefore that can't be the explanation of bivsara. Elam Rav Yochanan ad ben ashinayim. Until the area of the glands, it's very unclear here what the reference to is of ben ashinayim here anatomically, where Rav Yochanan is suggesting, based on the major of the Gemara, we'll try to surmise that he's speaking about a certain area. Ibayelo ben ashinayim kelifnim o kelechutz. That area of the glands that Rav Yochanan is mentioning, is that considered to be internal or external? Tashma, the Tani Rabbi Zakkai ad ben ashinayim, that is until the ben ashinayim atzmam kelifnim. That area of the glands is considered to be internal. So the dam found over there is still considered internal to the uterus. Only once it passes that area is it considered to be external to the uterus. But nita tana makom disha. My makom disha. What does that mean, makom disha? It's a euphemism. I'm reviewed the makom shashamash dash. The area that the member reaches while she's engaged in intercourse. In a braita, we have the area that's considered to be the bayit achitzon, is the area when the woman engages in intercourse, how far the member reaches inside of her, that's considered to be bayit achitzon. So based on that, you would have a sense that the glands that we're speaking about here are something deeper inside the woman. It's not something at the external side of the woman, it's something that's internal to the woman. And in all likelihood, it's connected to the opening of the rechem of the uterus. The uterus itself is oblong in shape. It is actually somewhat bigger. And then it narrows to a point where it reaches what's called the mouth of the uterus. That is very narrow. And that very narrow part of the uterus actually inserts into the vaginal canal. And the vaginal canal actually passes by. There's areas above and below that area of the piping of the uterus that comes in, that's the opening. That part of the uterus has the cervix at the end. The cervix is what is blocked. When a baby is inside, there's a mucus plug there that closes the cervix, keeps the baby inside, and keeps it sterile and sealed inside. When the woman's about to give birth, the mucus plug is discharged and the cervix opens to let the baby out. So that cervix, or the area around the cervix, somewhere near there is the ben ashinayim that we're speaking about here, because that's the discharge of the dam from the internal part of the uterus to the external side into the bayit achitzon. Now, kilifnim and kibachutz, by reference to the area of the vaginal canal that is past the cervix, as we noted before, that the area of the uterus that inserts into the vaginal canal is a narrow pipe that's inside of a larger pipe, and it extends somewhat into the vaginal canal before it terminates. So there's a part above that and below that, that might be considered bilifnim, and bibachutz would be from the end of the area by the cervix and outwards, or it might be a reference to the cervix itself, to the area where the uterus discharges the dam. Whatever it is something where the dam leaves the uterus, but does not leave the woman. So it's when the dam leaves the uterus, it's found in the vaginal canal, but it's yet to exit the vaginal canal outside of the woman. That makes her tmeya. Again, where exactly this ben ashinayim is not clear. Partly is described over here by the fact that it is the area that the member reaches when the woman has intercourse. So that's somewhat akin or somewhat similar to the area where the uterus terminates and the cervix is. They're probably around the same area that's being described here. And therefore, it's referencing to something in that area. What exactly or which glands or which item that the Gemara is referring to is a little difficult, and there are many opinions amongst the Mishonim, as well as the Achronim, as to what exactly is being pinpointed here as ben ashinayim. Tanu Rabbanan, Bivsara. So we have the Pasuk that teaches us that a woman becomes a nida, even though she sees the dam internally, and that's because the pasuk says, "V'isha ki tiye zava dam, yezova bimsara." While it's still in her basar, she still is tmeya. That means when it exits the uterus and flows out of the uterus, but still internal to her, that she is tmeya. That's the wilimo. That's how we know this. That she is tmeya when she has that sighting of dam internally, even before it exits and goes external. That's only true by nida. Zava minayin. How do I know that a zava also has the same rule that a discharge internally will be considered to be a zava? Tamalomar zova bibsara. Since it terms the discharge of the nida zova, we're going to say it has application to a zava as well. Poletet shechvadzera minayin. How do I know that if she discharges semen, that also, when it's internal, it makes her tmeya, that discharge, and not only when it exits the woman. That pasuk says, iyeh, bishak, itiyah, zavah, dam, iyeh, zovah, bibsara. Gemara darshan from iyeh, that extra word or extraneous terminology of iyeh teaches you that anything internal to the woman that is discharged makes her tmeya, even if it does not leave the woman. So over here you have three different discharges of the woman. You have dam nida, her menstrual blood, dam zava, which is an extended menstrual cycle, and shechvat zera, that's been deposited inside of her when she discharges that. All three of those discharges do not need to leave the woman to make her tmeya. They simply have to leave the rechem, they have to leave the uterus, even if they're found in the bayit achitzon, they make her tmeya. Rabbi Shimon Omer, dayake bo'ala. With regards to semen, she should be no better or no different than her mate. Ma bo'ala. Because the one who has intercourse with her, eno mitamei ashtetzei tumah lachutz, he's only tamei tumat shechvat zera, when he has a discharge, when the shechvat zera leaves the body of the man. Afi, so to the woman, eno mitamei ashtetzei tumat lachutz. So too for the woman, she should not be tmeya when she's polluted shechvat zera until it leaves her body. So Rabbi Shimon only disagrees with one of the three categories. He agrees by nida and zava that it doesn't have to leave the woman's body to make her tmeya. By semen, he says, it should be no different than the man. The man only becomes tamei when the shechvat zera exits his body. So too for the woman, she should only be tmeya when the shechvat zera exits her body, not when it simply exits the uterus or is in the bayit achitzon. She should have to leave her body completely. The Sava Rabbi Shimon Dayak Ebola. Is that really the opinion of Rabbi Shimon? That she's not tmeya until she discharges it outside of her body? Vatanya. We have a braita, which is the pasuk referencing to shechvat zera, which is bisha, asher ishkav ishota, a woman who has intercourse with a man, shechvat zara, a full intercourse, v'rachatsu b'mayim b'tamud ad arev. Both the man and the woman are tmeim, and they have to go to the mikveh, and they're tmeim until the evening, until the sun sets, until they have harev shemesh. The man is tmei because shechvat zera left his body. The woman is tmeya, gzeirat akatuv. She had bia, she is tmeya. The magav, the shechvat zera with her is magav beit hastarim. And again, the semen that's being discharged by the man over here is making her tmeya. That is a gzeirat akatuv, that a woman who engages in intercourse is tmeya tumat erev, just because she engaged in intercourse. V'tanya rachatsu b'mayim b'tamu al arev. Amar Rabbi Shimon, v'chi ma bazel l'lamdeinu. What is this pasuk coming to teach you with tamu? That they have to go to the mikveh and wait for Erev Shemesh. If it's for his tvila, that we know from the psukim before, which said, if it's for the woman that she came into contact with the shechvat zera, that we know from Parshat Emor, where it says there in Perek Chafet Pasuk Dalet, Ish ish mizer aron vutzaru al zaba kodeshim lo yochal ad asher itar ve'anogeya b'chon tenei nefesh o ish asher titzeim menu shechvat zara, then they are tmeim and brachatz b'saro b'mayim. You have to go to the mikveh and then v'ashemesh v'taher, and then only after every shemesh will you become tahor. So if it's for the woman coming into contact with the shechvat zara when it's discharged from her body, harei kvar ma'omur, and that's learned from the o ish asher teitzei mimenu, to teach you that anybody who comes into contact with shechvat zera needs to go to the mikveh. Ela mipnei shetumat beit hastarimi. There is no contact here because it must be talking about shechvat zera that is internal to the woman. Tumat beit hastarimi eno mitama. Over here it doesn't matter because the tuma or the contact is happening internally, elish gzira takaduvu, and despite the fact that it's internal to the woman, and it is magabe da starim, the gzira takaduvu is that she is tmeya. So you see over here that Rabbi Shimon agrees that shikmat zera can make the woman tmeya even when it's internal, even when she has yet to discharge that shikmat zera. Lokasha, kami mishameshet, kami poletet. Dealing with two different issues. The brayta that we just brought in the pasuk that we're speaking about is that when a woman has relations, when she has intercourse, she comes tmeya tumat erev. That's one form of tuma. There, even Rabbi Shimon agrees that even if the shikmat zera remains internal, it's still problematic because it's a gzera tekaduv that she is tmeya when she engages in intercourse. But poletet is a separate din, which is that if she exudes, she discharges shikmat zera, that she is tmeya, and that's only true when it exits the body of the woman. That's the difference between the statement of Rabbi Shimon before that taya kebo'ala, that she's like the one who she has intercourse with, where she only becomes tmeya when it exits her body. That's true when she's poletet shikmat zera, when she's now discharging the shikmat zera. But the case of shimush, where she's having intercourse, there you don't need anything to exit her body. That's exer tekaduv, that as soon as there is biyah with shikmat zera, she is tmeya. And even though, as the Balei Tosfot point out, that the answer of the Gemara is obvious because of the context of the pasuk. The pasuk says, Isha asher ishkav ish otah shikmat zera, rechatsu b'amayim b'tamu ad arev. So it's clear that the pasuk is speaking about a case of intercourse, not speaking about poletet shikmat zera. And therefore Tosfot says, what was the makshev, what was the questioner thinking when he brought that as a stira to the, what seemingly is the position of Rabbi Shimon with regards to poletet shikmat zera? So Tosfot says, the questioner thought that even though it is in the context of biyah, he thought it would only be true if there was also a plitat shikmat zera from internally, from the rechem, externally into the bayit achitzon, would you be tamei? And that the pasuk combined both issues together. The answer of the Gemara is that no, they are separate issues. And then the Balei Tosafot asks, why isn't this a question on the Rabbanan as well? They have the ribuy of iyeh, and then they have the pasuk here. Why do you need two psukim? So first of all, Tosafot says, maybe en hachanami, the same answer we give Rabbi Shimon is applicable for the Chachamim as well. And then he gives the second answer, which is even more interesting, which is that according to the Rabbanan, when it comes to plita shikhvat zera, the woman only be tamei if it went into the rechem and then was poletet, it would exit it from the rechem. Whereas by the case of biyah, she would be tmeya even if it never entered into the rechem and was niflat. And that's the difference in the psukim. The psukim is talking about shimush, talking about intercourse without the semen actually entering into the rechem and being discharged. Whereas the case of iyeh is a case where it went into the rechem and then was discharged. And that's what makes her tmeya poletet shikmat zera. And then for them will be the difference between the posuk over here and the yeh. So Gemara says, poletet, what do you need poletet for? Tibakala da hashimsha. Why is she tmeya for discharging the shikmat zera? She's already tmeya because she had intercourse. So why do I need poletet if she's already tmeya for intercourse? Bishitavla the shimusha. It's a case where she went to the mitveh after she had biyah. Now she's Torah. And afterwards, she's discharging the shikmat zera. So that'll make her tmeya again. L'memra d'mishameshet b'tumat erev sagila. You're telling me that a woman has intercourse. She, by the next day, can already be mitahar herself, and then be tahor, and then afterwards have a discharge of shikmat zera that will be impactful because of poletet shikmat zera, not because she musha. V'amar Rava. Didn't Rava say, mishameshet, a woman has intercourse? For the next 3 days, she can't eat truma. It's impossible that she won't discharge shikhvat zera. Because, remember, shikhvat zera is only considered to be viable for 72 hours. After 72 hours, it's not considered to be shikhvat zera anymore. Because if it goes putrid, it's not able to fertilize at that point. And it doesn't have a din of shikhvat zera. So that shikhvat zera within the first 72 hours is problematic. What Rava says is, once the woman has intercourse and becomes tmeya because of that intercourse, she cannot become tehorah from that intercourse because after the intercourse, she will continuously discharge shikmat zera over the next 72 hours. And that means she'll never have a moment where she can be tehorah in order to go to the mikveh and separate between the problem of shimush and the problem of poletet shikmat zera. So according to Rava, you never can go to the mikveh for intercourse and then have a separate problem of poletet shikmat zera, because the shimush itself goes directly into the problem of poletet, and she never becomes Torah. So again, why don't we just say she is Tmeya because of Shimusha? Forget about poletet shechvat zera. So Gemara says, Hachamayiskina, shehid bilua b'mita. They put her into the mikveh on her bed. So she didn't have to move. She didn't have to stand up. So then whatever shechvat zera went in, she's not discharging it over the next 72 hours because of the fact that when you stand up, that's what causes the flow of the shechvat zera to come out. Over here, she remains laying down, so the shechvat zera is not going to be discharged. And therefore she can become Torah from her shimusha. And then afterwards, if she gets up, then she'll be tmeya because of the poletet shechvat zera. Michlal, the chikama rova. If you're saying that, that means Rova's case must be a case, the azlei bikara vitavla. Means the case, according to Rova, is where she's trying to go to the mikvah. She stood up and went to the mikvah. And Rova says that doesn't work because when you stand up, you're going to have a discharge of shechvat zera. Where it says, Dilma, bahadi d'kaazla shadita. Why is Rova right that you have to wait for the 72 hours? Maybe when she stood up, all the shechvat zera was discharged. And she no longer has a discharge anymore. If you want to say now, that's exactly what Rava is saying. Dilma ishtayir. We're worried that maybe not all of it came out when she stood up. It will drip out over time, and that's what we're worried about. Shema nishtayir mibayle. The language that Rava uses does not imply that. The language she should have said is, the reason she can't go to the mikvah in the first 72 hours, or she can't eat truma, is because maybe there'll be some residual shechvat zera that she's poletet. That's not what he says. Rava says she cannot eat truma because she will for certain be poletet shechvat zera. That makes it sound like it's an absolute certainty and not something that maybe or there's a residual of shechvat zera over here. So it's very hard to explain Rava in that way. Elo the Rava nami she'd be lua b'mita. So Rava's case is also a case where she's lying on the bed and they put her into the mikveh. Well, if that's the case, why is there a difference between Rabbi Shimon's position and Rava's position? Also, voter asks over here, why isn't the pasuk a problem because of Rava's statement, irrespective of what Rabbi Shimon says? So, by those votes say that, absent Rabbi Shimon's statement, we could have explained the pasuk that she's able to go to the mikveh in a case where either she stood up and all of the semen was discharged, or she did a check and she cleaned out the area. But according to Rabbi Shimon, you can't use that answer because he said, "Kan bishem misha meshet b'kan be'poletet," which implies that she still could be poletet shechvat zera after she was mishameshet. If she already has cleaned herself out and there's nothing left in there and that's why she can go to the mikveh, then there's no issue of poletet that's left anymore. And therefore, for Rabbi Shimon, it's a much more serious issue as to how to reconcile the psukim. So the Baal HaTosafot believe that you can have a discharge completely of the shechvat zera in an instance where she stands up. And that's their conclusion over here from the Gemara, that you can get rid of the pelitat shechvat zera problem simply by standing up or by clearing out that area. On the other hand, the Ran believes that in the maskana, a woman who gets up, she will discharge a large amount of it, but there still is a safek with regards to the remainder, and she might drip out afterwards, and therefore she's not considered to be tehora, the gamre, in terms of pelitat shechvat zera, because there is a residual that could come out. So that's Gemara now has to come up with a distinction between Rava and Rabbi Shimon, which will also give us a distinction between Rava and the Pasuk. But Lokasha, they're different. Kan b'mitapechet, kan she'ena mitapechet. And one is where a case where she flipped over, and the other case is where she didn't flip over. So that the difference being, if she flips over, it's the problem that Rava notes, which is when she turns over, it could be that the Zera is coming out, and the Zera coming out makes it that she's tmeya for the next 72 hours because of that flow. Rabbi Shimon's case is a case where she didn't flip over. Therefore, the shechvat Zera stays wherever it is, and then you can go to the mikveh for Shimusha, and then only later, when she discharges the shechvat Zera, she'll become tmeya. V'rova akra kai, and Rava is referencing to the pasuk itself. V'chaki kamar, kikat avrachmana, when the pasuk says, v'rachatsu b'mayim mitamuad arev, v'sheina mitapechet, that's only when she doesn't turn over. Aval b'mitapechet, when she does turn over, kol shloshayamim asura lechol b'truma, the next 3 days she can't eat truma, she has sharla shlotiplot, because then it's impossible for her not to have a discharge of shechvat zera. According to Rabbi Shimon, there are two problems of tuma. One problem of tuma is shimusha, is the actual intercourse, There, the Shechmet Zeret does not need to exit the woman. She is Bigzeret HaKatub Tmeya, not even because of contact with the Shechmet Zeret, because it's Beit HaStarim. Gzeret HaKatub, she is Tmeya. She can then be Mitaher herself from that Tumah, because it's Tumat Erev, and that's only in a case where she goes to the mikveh lying down and never turned over. She can be Mitaher herself from that. Then after that, you have a problem of Poletet Shechmet Zeret. Poletet Shechmet Zeret, according to Rabbi Shimon, is only a problem when it actually leaves the woman and makes her Tmeya. That Shechmet Zeret, it was inside the uterus and then was discharged, will not make her Tmeya, or the fact that it's found in the Bayit HaChitzon does not make her Tmeya. It has to be discharged from her body, just like Bo'ala, just like the one who becomes Tamei, because of discharging the Shechmet Zeret, which is the man, only happens when it leaves his body. So too for the woman, only when it leaves her body does she become Tmeya. Rova's din, which is the din that if a woman has Shimusha, she cannot become Torah from that Shimusha for 3 days. That's in a case where she went into the mikvah b'mita, but she had turned over. She had rolled over. When she rolls over, that causes the Shechmet Zeret to discharge over the next 72 hours. And since it discharges over the next 72 hours, you'll never get an opportunity to go to the mikvah of Shimusha, where she will be Torah, and then allow her to have Harav Shemesh become Torah, and then worry about Poletet Shechmet Zeret. Because the plita of the Shechmet Zeret will continue from the moment of the intercourse for the next 72 hours. After 72 hours, it doesn't matter because the Shechmet Zeret is no longer Shechmet Zeret. For that period of time, she will be Tmeya and never get the window of opportunity to become Teorah. Rashi does bring a second lashon about mitapechet and ene mitapechet, which is mitapechet b'shat tashmish. It's a case where she turned over at the time of intercourse, and therefore the Zeret never took hold or went into the Rechem together, meaning that it disperses, and therefore it drips out piecemeal. Whereas if she didn't turn over during the time of the Tashmish, then all the Zeret stayed together, it's viscous, and it's a single unit, and therefore when she discharges it, it's all going to come out at once. That's an alternate explanation Rashi brings, although it seems like it's a much more difficult explanation of mitapechet and ena mitapechet. Okay, we're going to stop here, 8 lines down on the top of Membet, Amud Aleph.